Blog Talk Radio.
Despite the fact that McIlroy,
blew the Masters and, you know, had that tough round, that you know, bad final round at Augusta, not one time did I feel like after Friday, and particularly after Friday's round he had, that he was not going to win this tournament. And putting his, you know, performance into historical perspective, when you look at some of the all-time greats who he compares to as far as what they did in terms of their highest rounds at the U.S. Open or highest finishes at the U.S. Open, yeah, Jack Nicklaus back in 67, who was 9-under when he won at Baltimore. Yeah, Bobby Jones back in 29 with 1-under when he won his that was the highest score he ever had at the U.S. Open when he won. And Ben Hogan was 8-under back in 1948. So that is where McIlroy compares when you look at some of the all-time greats in their highest finishing scores. And this is exactly what the doctor ordered for the sport of golf. I mean, Tiger obviously has his struggles. You know, there's a ton of young talent in the golf world right now. Is Jason Day, who finished second behind McIlroy, a distant second behind McIlroy yesterday, but for the second straight major, finishes, you know, second. And definitely he's a talent. He's a talent to watch for years to come. You know, Graham McDowell is very good. Yeah, guys like Lucas Glover. I mean, there's a ton of young Anthony Kim and there are a number of talented players, young players who are, you still have the guys like Lee Westwood and Phil Mickelson in the mix, but, you know, golf is flooded with young talent, but none of them has emerged the way Rory McIlroy emerged yesterday afternoon over the course of the 4-day period. None of them had that kind of stretch where you just say, hey, this is the guy. And McIlroy, again, to me, established himself as the next one. Now, you know, only time will tell how far he goes or what he does in the future. You know, he could be the next, I mean, who knows? He could be the next Tiger. He could be the next Nick Faldo. He may be the next Tom Watson. But he is the next one. Whoever that next is, he's definitely the next star of this sport. How he handles that, we'll see. 347-215-6180. 347-215-6180. I will, later on in the program, I will tell you what I did not like about Congressional and about the course. And I also will tell you why you cannot compare McIlroy's performance with Tiger Woods' 2000 performance at the U.S. Open. I'll tell you that later on in the program. But coming up, we will have Monday's headlines in the world of sports, and we also have the entertainment news and headlines as well. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Kern Review. We'll be right back.
When you walk through the garden,
to this latest edition of the Cyril Kern Review. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Yankees up 4-1 over Cincinnati in the top of the second inning as interleague play continues. A big weekend for interleague play as they had the highest attendance had the highest attendance for the 45 games they've had since going back to 2008. So a successful weekend for the sport of baseball with the second round of interleague play. Today's headlines, Jack McKeon has been named the interim manager of the Florida Marlins. McKeon, of course, replaces, you know, McKeon, you know, of course, is 80 years old. Now, first of all, let's get that out of the way. He replaces Edwin Rodriguez, who resigned and was about to get fired. So it's one of those, you can either quit or we can get rid of you, one of those ordeals. So McKeon replaces him as interim manager for the Florida Marlins. McKeon, of course, managed that team back in 2003 to a world championship. And, again, he's a very – listen, the guy's been managing a year twice. He's been around forever, okay? The guy, his first managing job came back in 1973. So, you know, he's been around forever. He becomes the oldest manager since Connie Mack, who managed the Philadelphia A's for 49 years and retired when he was 87 years old. This is a team right now in Florida, when you talk about the Marlins, that is down in the dumps right now. They've lost 18 out of 19 games. They're in last place in that division. Josh Johnson, one of the best pitchers in baseball, is on the disabled list. Hanley Ramirez is having a nightmare of a season. And, you know, when healthy and when he's playing well, is one of the best players in the sport. Don't be surprised if this team makes a run. Again, there's a ton of talent on that team, especially offensively. You got decent, pretty good starting pitching. This team is clearly underachieved. They are not as bad as their record. Even with those two good players injured, they're not as bad as that record. That record shows. Who knows? Maybe they can strike lightning in a bottle again. Remember, McKeon came in for Jeff Torborg back in 2003, and won a championship with the Marlins. So we'll see. Again, 80 years old, though. I mean, geez, that is my goodness. And then you hear about the fact that he has a hearing problem, that he has trouble hearing. I mean, that's a tough deal. I mean, that's a tough deal if you're a Marlins fan. And it seems to me that they clearly did not anticipate them having this much trouble. And it looks to me like McKeon was an absolute emergency hire, so to speak. And this wasn't the plan going into the season, without question. So we'll see what happens with that. Cardinals first baseman Albert Pujols is out 4 to 6 weeks with a displaced fracture in his left wrist. Pujols had heated up in the last, couple of weeks, had 8 home runs in his last 17 games. Couldn't have come at a worse time for the Cardinals, as they have lost 7 out of 10, despite the fact that they won the last 2 games of this series this past weekend. They're still right in the thick of that division, trailing Milwaukee for first place at 40-33. But again, they have a tough stretch coming up for him to be out a month. We'll see how they can hold up. But this is the last thing that the St. Louis Cardinals needed. And really, if you're Albert Pujols, you're coming. This is a contract year for Albert Pujols. We'll see how well he recovers from this injury. Part of me says that the Cardinals, they're not thinking that this is absolutely the worst thing, considering that they don't want to fork out $300 million to pay him come the end of the season. Major League Baseball has rejected the proposed deal between Los Angeles Dodgers and Fox that would have television contract that would have been worth over $3 billion, $385 million of that would have been paid up front to Frank and Jimmy McCourt. Of course, they're going through their divorce. They're still, their divorce proceedings are still, have been settled. And Fox, McCourt's, this was the last bullet basically for McCourt. This was the only way that he was going to be able to keep the team was through this television contract. He is not going to be able to afford the payroll, when payroll comes up in, he's not gonna be able to make payroll at the end of the month. Major League Baseball is gonna take over the team. Major League Baseball is gonna take over the team and do what they do, do what they want with it. But this was McCourt's last chance to make payroll. This is his only chance to make payroll. Had Major League Baseball allowed this deal to go through. And the reason why Major League Baseball doesn't allow this deal to go through, besides the fact that Bud Selig can't stand Frank McCourt, so putting that aside, is the fact that they don't trust McCourt, or the McCourts for that matter. I mean, you think that the McCourts would put that $385 million to good use as far as putting it back into the team and paying off bills and, doing the right thing with the money. But based on previous dealings, I mean, who knows? I mean, they might go out there and buy a $30 million mansion somewhere in the, Newport News, or in Newport Beach. Basically baseball does not trust McCourt. They don't trust him, especially they don't trust him with money. So, again, to me, that was the main reason why they did not allow that deal to go through, that television contract to go through. And he's going to be forced, to give up the team by the end of the month. Still to come on this latest edition of the Silicon Review, we'll have today's headlines as far as entertainment news, Shaquille O'Neal in the news, also tragedy in the sports world, tragedy in the music world and the movie world. So we'll talk about that and what is wrong with Beyonce. We'll discuss that as well. A lot to talk about on this latest edition of the review. As always, the number is 347-215-6180. Hit me up. Follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGiro. We'll be right back. Review 48 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour, as we discuss the world of sports and entertainment. Jackass star Ryan Dunn is dead at the age of 34. Dunn was killed instantly in a car crash in West Goshen, Pennsylvania, on Route 322. Dunn, again, along with another passenger, was killed instantly. Dunn was driving his 2007 Porsche. Was speeding on Route 322. Before the crash, he had pictures on the internet on Twitter of him, of him drinking. When these guys or girls or stars get money, some of the decisions that they make, it's mind-boggling. I mean, obviously, this guy getting 34 years old, is still obviously extremely young. You wonder what people are thinking. A lot of these stars just think they're invincible when they get some money in their pocket. And again, you're driving a Porsche. 3 o'clock in the morning. He's probably been drinking. And the worst part about it is, you know, the fact that he takes his own life and then takes somebody else with him. You know, that's why even, you know, as bad as it was, as bad as it is, him passing away, you know, getting passenger alongside of him is, you know, is gone as well. So, just, you know, hate to hear that kind of news. Of course, Jackass has become just a cultural phenomenon from the television show on the, you know, on MTV, and they've made now at least 2 or 3 movies. I think the recent one came out not too long ago, Jackass and 3D or something. I think that's what, that was the name of the last one. Of course, Johnny Knoxville is the star of it, but just something that you absolutely hate to hear. L.A. producer Robert Ross has testified that he was kidnapped back in 2008 by gang members because he had allegedly had a tape of Shaquille O'Neal, a sex tape of one Shaquille O'Neal. Roberts and Shaquille O'Neal previously had a failed business deal that went bad. And, you know, it sounds to me like he was trying to possibly blackmail O'Neal with the sex tape. He offered Shawnee O'Neal, who was the ex-wife of Shaquille O'Neal, he offered her to view the sex tape. She claims that she wanted no part of it. He was, again, in 2008, he was beaten up and got taken, beaten up and robbed by 7 gang members. And also was taken, who stole $15,000 from him. And again, he claims that Shaquille O'Neal paid these gang members to beat him up. Now, a couple things about this. One, I just want to know, I'm just trying to figure out what the connection would be between Shaquille O'Neal and gang members. And I was discussing it with a friend yesterday. You know, you figure Shaquille O'Neal's at a level now. And Shaquille O'Neal has never, ever had any off-the-field, off-the-court trouble. Other than sleeping with other basketball players' wives, Gilbert Arenas, or girlfriends. He's never had any, you know, crimes. There's nothing, you know, DUIs and stuff, you know, little dumb stuff like that. And, I've never known Shaq. You've never seen Shaq to have entourages and things of that nature. You know, he has the one bodyguard who's been with him forever. You know, he has that. That's probably the most familiar person that's been close to Shaq in his whole entire professional basketball career. You know, here's a guy, again, and, you know, the guy claims that the tape was recorded over when he was the one who was apparently recording the tape. And you just can't take some of these guys, you can't take some of these fans or whatever, not fans, but some of these guys seriously when all of a sudden now the tape has been mysteriously recorded over. You know, if it was that important, then why, you know, why you keep it somewhere safe or why you make copies? We'll see what comes out of it. Of course, Shaquille O'Neal just completely denies this. And I don't expect anything to come out of it, And, of course, you know, Shaquille O'Neal allegedly on the tape was having sex with somebody else other than Shawnee O'Neal. Well, you know, that happens all the time with these guys. So that's not a shock whatsoever. So we'll see what comes out of this. I don't expect much to come out of this. I don't even expect this to be a settlement out of court. There's no tape. The guy doesn't have a tape anymore. So what is he going? You know, where's the evidence? You know, where's the evidence of him where's the evidence of him? You know, if anything, Shaquille O'Neal could say he tried to extort him. And, you know, the guy really doesn't have a leg to stand on when you think about it. Amy Winehouse has canceled parts of her European tour due to drunkenness and being late at a recent show she had in Serbia. Winehouse has, between Amy Winehouse and Lindsay Lohan, I've never seen, those might be the two biggest junkies or rehab people, famous rehab people that we've seen in this generation. I mean, Amy, how much money has Amy Winehouse made off being, you know, an alcoholic and basically a crackhead? I mean, why would anybody pay? First of all, I'm mad at the fans who would pay $57 to see Amy Winehouse. I wouldn't go to a 4-H fair to see Amy Winehouse. She had the one song that was hot when it came out, but she can't stay sober. You know what a story would be? This is a story that it's obviously newsworthy because, you know, she's a celebrity. You know what a story would be if Amy Winehouse did a concert sober, or if Amy Winehouse was spotted being sober anywhere? That would be a story. She's always drunk or high. When is she not? I mean, when is she not either or? And again, if you pay to see Amy Winehouse, you're a fool. You're a fool. I mean, yeah, that's all there is to it. I just don't get the allure. Whatever talent that she did have has been just seeped out through all the alcohol and drugs. So, see what happens with that. Still to come on this next edition of the Cyril Coombe Review. We'll continue on with this weekend's headline, with Entertainment News headlines, as the music world lost a legend. And also, your favorite comedian might be coming back soon. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Coombe Review. We'll be right back. Saturday morning wake up, excuse me, and I do it all the time, of the Cyril Coombe Review, 57 minutes after this 7 o'clock hour, as we discuss the world of sports and entertainment. We continue with this weekend's entertainment, this week's entertainment news. Clarence Clemons of the famed E Street Band, of course, passed away this weekend at the age of 69. Clemons, of course, died of complications from a June 12th stroke that he had. Clemons was one of the original members of the E Street Band, played the saxophone, was outside, I feel, outside of Bruce Springsteen, the most famous member of that band. Now, Stevie Van Zandt has, you know, obviously become popular due to the Sopranos and that whole deal, but Clarence Clemons to me was the clear cut number two in that band. I mean, Springsteen loved him. You know, Springsteen had, you know, some nice things. Obviously, a lot of great things to say about him over the past couple of days. He was everywhere on television, and you know, he did his own thing with a couple of solo albums. You saw him on The Wire. You saw him on Different Strokes. You know, he was on a couple of episodes of My Wife and Kids, you know, that show with Tisha Campbell and Damon Wayans a few years back. And, you know, he was a guy, listen, this guy was more than, you know, he was one of the more famous and popular, you know, number two guys in a big time band. When you think of these legendary bands like the Rolling Stones, or I don't even consider the Beatles a band. I mean, the Beatles to me are just like four or five just individual legends. They almost were too popular as individuals to be even considered a band. But, I mean, you could take them into account. But I'm thinking like Rolling Stones, Pearl Jam, those bands like that, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Clemens was like probably one of the most popular and recognizable names in music that wasn't the lead person in a band. So again, he was sorely missed. He 69 years old, was surprised to hear about it. Of course, I knew about the stroke that he had, but it seemed like he was headed towards a possible recovery. But he passed away. And again, he did his own thing. I mean, he wasn't just an E Street band, worked with the likes of Ringo Starr and Aretha Franklin and Lady Gaga. So he was into a lot of things other than just the music with the E Street band. So again, he would definitely sorely missed. Dave Chappelle could be returning back to television. Chappelle is in talks for another possible variety show with a paid subscription provider, the likes of, say, a Netflix, Crackle, I've never even heard of, or even a Hulu. Remember, these independent subscriptions have a lot of money. I mean, Hulu or Netflix just paid John Fichtner, who directed the Social Network, $100 million to produce the show. So a lot of these guys have a ton of cash to throw around. It makes perfect sense because Chappelle wants creative control anyway. And listen, Chappelle needs to be out there. Or he needs to be back doing something. I mean, for a guy like of his talent to be standing, to be idle or not in the mix, it's just a waste. I mean, the Chappelle show was a landmark. Just one of those. It was like Halley's Comet. I mean, it was one of those once every blue moon shows that you see once every 15 to 20 years. And I certainly can't blame them for leaving. They tried to change the complexion of the show. They wanted, some of the episodes that they were going to show in the next season, were going to be awful. So I don't blame them for walking away. But he's been going for too long now. Out of the television mix. Hopefully he gets that together and comes back strong with another television show. Apparently, of course, he's going to have more creative control with this show if it comes about. So I'll definitely keep you posted on that news. You remember I told you about Megan Fox last week and the whole deal with her not being in the newest Transformers? Well, apparently she was fired from the new Transformers because of a statement that she made towards Michael Bay, calling him, saying that he had a Napoleon complex, and also, and more importantly, or was worse for her, saying that he was Hitler-like. Now, remember, Steven Spielberg is a producer, of course, of Transformers, and Steven Spielberg, who made Schindler's List. So, using the term or word Hitler, certainly could not have helped her chances on being in the next Transformers. So that, I just want to keep you updated on that. That just came out in terms of why she possibly was fired from starring in the latest Transformers, which will be out a little bit later, in a couple of weeks, I think, later on this summer. So to come on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, I will tell you what I did not like about Congressional and why you cannot compare Rory McIlroy's performance to Tiger Woods' performance. We'll talk about that. We'll also have celebrity birthdays and get into some Beyonce, as she will have an album coming out next week. We'll talk about her and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Thank you. 5 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 20th of June, 2011. Celebrity birthdays, Olympia Dukakis is 80 years old. Of course, you remember her from her Oscar-winning role in Moonstruck, where she won a Best Supporting Actress Award, co-starring along with Cher and Nicolas Cage. She, of course, is the cousin of former Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis, who was the Democratic nominee back in 1988 and got smashed by George Bush in that particular election. Also, 83, you have Martin Landau, actor Martin Landau, who was an Oscar nominee for his role in Ed Wood, or who won an Oscar for his role in Ed Wood. He's been around forever. I mean, 83 years old. He's been in a ton of stuff. Was in Rounders with Matt Damon. Like I mentioned, Ed Wood. So he's just, you know, you talk about standing the test of time. That's standing when you're, you know, now he's probably just doing voiceovers, but still, you know, he's been around well over 40 or 50 years in the business. Danny Aiello is 78 years old, but did not know he was that old. He's been around for a while in his own right. Aiello, of course, was most famous for his role in Spike Lee's hit Do the Right Thing back in 1989, when he played Sal and was an Oscar nominee, was nominated for the Best Supporting Actor Award in that particular role. That was a great part by him. One thing about Danny Aiello, he's been, is that he doesn't make, you know, he hasn't been in, he's been in a couple good movies, very good movies, but he does not take bad roles. Like, every movie he's made is not good, but it's not like you will never look at him and say, you know what, that's a bad role. Like, he'll have a good role in a movie, he'll have a good role in a bad movie. Very good actor, another guy who's been around for a while. Interesting thing about him is, didn't really get his first major break until he was 40 years old. What does that tell you? That tells you that this guy was grinding for a long time before he, was able to break through. And when he broke through in a big way. It was in, you know, The Godfather Part Two, was, in the Bang the Drum Slowly, Once Upon a Time in America. So when he made it, he came in with a bang. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, 69 years old. Bob Vila, favorite house person who home builder, is 65. John Goodman of Roseanne fame is 59. And the lovely Nicole Kidman is 44 years old. Nicole Kidman, amazingly, just got better as, you know, as soon as she broke up, or as soon as her and Tom Cruise divorced and broke up, she became a great actress. I don't think that's by coincidence, to be honest with you. So she is 44 years old. When we return, we're going to talk a little Beyonce. She has an album coming out next week, but we're going to talk about why she continuously trying to reinvent herself. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Silicon Review. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. back to the Cyril Review, 10 minutes after 8 o'clock hour. Of course, next Tuesday, Beyonce will release her fourth album called Four. It'll be her fourth album since she went solo back in 2003. And very interestingly, I saw some pictures of Beyonce. You can check them out on MediaTakeout.com. You know, very exotic, sensual pictures. If you're a man, certainly you would have no issue with them. Definition of eye candy. But, you know, when I was looking at them, I was thinking to myself, like, wow, like, you know, she's trying to change her, not change her image. She's always been sexy, but, you know, why is she going in this direction? She's really trying to promote this album harder than any album previously. And, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal had she not, you know, changed her name basically in her last album or created an alter ego called Sasha Fierce. Just the last album. Now, listen, if you're around long enough, if you're fortunate enough to be around 20, 25, 30, 40 years, you know, as being a type of artist that she is, you're going to have to reinvent yourself at some point in your career. I mean, Madonna's done it a number of times. But again, Madonna's been around, you know, 30, 35 years. You know, Beyonce, and again, I'm not counting the Destiny Child's days because she's with a group. It's totally different being in a group versus being a solo artist. So as a solo artist, her career span has been 8 years. And this will be the second time that she basically has, you know, reinvented herself and, you know, totally changed things up. Remember, just her last album was I Am Sasha Fierce. And when you go look back, when she came out with her first album back in 2003, Dangerously in Love, she sold 4 million copies, in US, and this is U.S., or domestically, 4 million copies. Her second album, B-Day, sold 3 million copies, and her last album, I Am Sasha Fierce, sold 2 million copies. Do you sense a trend here? So her album sales have been down, have gone down by a million each time, which makes you believe that, or makes you think that she right now cannot be fully confident in her product or the product that she's putting out there. And, you know, that sounds crazy for somebody of that talent level and of that status to not be confident or 100% confident about what she's doing or how she's about her albums. But listen, you know, when you may try to make these drastic changes, you're doing it for a reason. You know, if you're somebody who is on the radio and you're not getting ratings, you better do something or you're gonna be off the air. So I'm not knocking her for this, but you know, it just makes you wonder about, you know, why on her album. Listen, her first album was a great album, it was a classic. Her last two albums have not been up to par. You know, why haven't her albums been up to par? Or is she spending too much time, you know, in the movies? Is she spending too much time, you know, selling herself as far as, you know, with endorsements and, you know, with the Revlon commercials? I mean, she's all over the place. I mean, she is all over. Beyonce is everywhere. I mean, you look at an artist like Alicia Keys came out, her first album is clearly her best album. But the other albums are very good that she came out with, and you know, songs that ain't there stands by itself, but her quality of work has been at a certain level. And you've seen Alicia Keys stay Alicia Keys. She really hasn't tried to change a lot up. You know, she'll try to switch up styles in terms of her album, but that's, you know, no album is the same, basically, for a lot of artists, especially, you know, of the R&B and soul ilk. Again, we'll talk about this album next week. Very interesting to see the reception it gets when it comes out next Tuesday. It'll come out someplace all over the world, you know, on Friday, but in the United States, it'll be out next Tuesday. So we'll see what happens and see how many sales she does in the first week. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, what I did not like about Congressional, we'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back
on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
17 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Chat line is up. Forgot to mention that, but it is up. So if you have any questions or comments, you can certainly hit me up there. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Of course, yesterday, you had Rory McIlroy winning his first major. He becomes the youngest major winner at 22 since Tiger Woods, of course, won the 97 Masters back at Augusta at the age of 21. He's, a guy who seems to be looked upon as being that next great player. But of course, in our sports society, when a guy goes out there and does something spectacular, we always find a way to overhype it or run wild with it or go crazy with it. And no different this time. No, that was no different with McIlroy's victory. A couple things before I even get to that. Couple things about the course. Number one, that was not a U.S. Open caliber course that you saw with Congressional. Now, again, I live in the D.C. metro area. I loved it. I like it. I love the area. I've been here living here for 7 years now, and certainly like when big events come to this town. But I have to call a spade. That course got destroyed, not only by McIlroy but by about 20 other players who were under par over the course of the tournament. That's unheard of at a U.S. Open in recent memory. Okay, the last time you had that many players under par was back in 1990. So you got to go back 21 years to have that many players under par at a U.S. Open. Let me give you the last five winning scores of U.S. Opens, and again, the last five winning scores of the last five U.S. Opens. Graham McDowell last year was even par, last year. Lucas Glover year before was four under. You had Tiger in the playoff was one under. You had Angel Cabrera in 2007 was five over, and Jeff Ogilvy back in 2006 at five over. Now, golf wants to blame, the rain and the greens being soft. That's not the first time that it has rained on a weekend at a U.S. Open. I mean, the pin places were easy. The rough was not that thick. I mean, this course played like a Phoenix Open or something. And that is why you cannot sit up here and compare what McIlroy did yesterday or this past, in this tournament, to what Tiger Woods did at the 2000 U.S. Open. The 2000 U.S. Open, there was one guy under par, and that was Tiger Woods. Okay, one guy, and Tiger Woods was 12 under par. Everybody else was over, and he won by 15 strokes. Tiger Woods of 2000, now the key word, that's the key word, the Tiger Woods of 2000 would have been like 25 under par at this course. He would have killed, he would have destroyed Congressional. I mean, destroyed that course. That was not, again, a U.S. Open caliber course. There's no sugarcoating it. There's no getting around it. And that's why I cannot put, you know, historic perspective, cannot put what McIlroy did into historic perspective. I mean, you just can't. Because I have to look at the course. Now, if he had did what he did, and let's say everybody else had been over par, or you only had maybe one or two people shoot under, then I could give it more credence. But you know, McIlroy is a big time. He's going to be a big time player. He's going to, you know, you get the sense of watching McIlroy, the same sense you got if you're a tennis fan, that you got watching, say, Roger Federer. You know, if this guy stays healthy, he's going to win multiple majors. There's no question about it. But let's calm down with the Tiger Woods comparisons. Tiger Woods, by the age of 24, had already completed the career of the Grand Slam, okay, and had five majors in his back pocket by the age of 24, or 25. This is McIlroy's first major. Let's calm down. Let's allow him to be great and allow him to put himself on this on a pedestal before we do it. And I understand golf is thirsty for a new superstar. I totally understand it. And it's great. Listen, he's great for the game. He has a little swagger. He has some swagger to him. He has a great swing. He's young. You know, good personality. Media friendly. You know, there's a lot to like about McIlroy. Easy to root for based on how he responded coming off the major, coming off the disappointment at the Masters. But let's calm down with these Tiger Woods comparisons. And Graham McDowell, I understand that him and Graham McDowell from the same, you know, both from Northern Ireland, but Graham McDowell comes out there and says he's the best player that I've ever played with, I've ever seen. Graham McDowell was playing in majors. Now, he was missing a cut, but he was playing in majors going back to 2005 when Tiger Woods was on a run where he won 6 out of 14 majors. Graham, like, let's get a grip here. Let's be realistic. You've seen Tiger Woods at his best, or near his best. Rory McIlroy is not as good as Tiger Woods was at his best. I'm not even talking about 2000. I'm talking about 2005. Let's be realistic. But I did not like the course. I did not like how easy it played. You know, I like when guys are struggling. That's why the U.S. Open has always been my favorite tournament to watch, because it makes mere mortals out of these, you know, superstar golfers and out of these guys who are the best in the world at what they do. It humanizes them in many ways. I'm like, you know what? I can go out there and shoot, you know, 20 over par. When we return, we'll have some final thoughts. And we'll have some final thoughts on this latest edition of the Cyril Clement Review. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Silver Coin Review. 26 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour. A couple of notes on the NBA. Of course, the draft is coming up Thursday. We'll talk about it in depth on the next edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. The Cavs are trying to trade out that pick. Well, first of all, they want both Derek Williams and Kyrie Irving. That's not going to happen. But they could be looking at offers. They should be looking at offers for the number one pick. You know, apparently they are sold on Kyrie Irving. I'm not, you know, based on the fact the guy only played a handful of college games as a freshman. There have also been some talks that the Lakers want to possibly move Paul Gasol for Kevin Love and a number two pick. If you're the Lakers, and I love Gasol, you probably have to make that move. And the thing that puts it over the top to me is the number two pick. Your number two pick, you can get Derek Williams. So you can get the number, you can get Kevin Love and Derek Williams. I mean, Kevin Love is what, 23, 24? I think 24 years old. Derek Williams has a chance to be a very good player in this league. You get more athletic. You get younger and more athletic at the same time. I like Gasol a lot. But that one, I don't know if it's going to happen, but that one could be one to watch out for. Also, you have both the Lakers and Miami trying to trade into the first round. Neither one of those teams currently has first round picks, so we'll be on the lookout for that. I don't know how many moves that you can make as a team if you're a team as far as trading players when the CBA is going to be. But the CBA is going to be up on June 30th. I mean, I would think that they would have to wait until the CBA gets done before any major moves are made. So, I mean, we'll see how that goes over the course of the next couple of days. I don't know if you're going to see any major moves. I mean, I see some cap relief or cap space moves made based on the cap space. But, again, even those moves might not be – you know, might be few and far between because you don't know what the cap is going to be next year. I mean, are they going to have a hard cap? Is the cap, how many millions of dollars down is the cap going to go down? You know, can we be looking at a cap next year like 45 million, 46 million? Yeah, I mean, you just don't know. So, again, I don't anticipate any just league-wide, any moves that are going to shake up the league. I just don't see that happening over the course of the next couple of days leading up to the draft, which will take place at the Prudential Center in New Jersey. That's going to wrap it up. I will see you next time on the latest edition of Silicon Review. So long.